The following is a presentation of the Boston Podcast Network. Podcasting is a great way for professionals to tell their story. Find out how you can get started at pod617.com.
Are you ready? It's showtime!
From the Pod 617 studios in Westwood, Massachusetts, it's the Boston Podcast with David Yaz and a rotating cast of characters from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
This is our f***ing city.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, all the ships at sea, lovers, muggers, and thieves. Welcome to the Boston Podcast. My name is Dave. If you like our show, I encourage you to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your pods. And if you want your own podcast, go to pod617.com. It's the Boston Podcast Network. It's what we do right here in our Westwood, Mass studios or anywhere around the globe by the use of the internet and stuff. We'll do a ton of podcasts remotely. We'll send you out a quality USB mic to get started, and we'll produce the whole shebang for you. So, great guest in studio today. This guy builds stuff, and I like building stuff, but I never got really beyond Legos. So he's going to fill us in. Real estate professional, Matthew Abrams. We go by Matt?
Yeah, Matt, for sure.
I got a brother, Matt. We called him Matty until he was about, I think, 16, and then he's like, guys, the Matty thing is not done.
I want to be a Matty. I'm never a Matty. I'm like, Matty? Matthew's the author, Matt. And that's what women call me. But I just feel like just Matt. But Matty's cool.
Okay. Let's formally welcome Matt to the studio. He's here. What do you think of the place here, our studio in Westwood?
What? This is really cool. The microphone's a little intimidating from the large side. But, yeah, I'm impressed.
I had a woman in here once. She was an educator. She happened to be a very lovely put-together woman. She happened to be African-American. And I said, don't be intimidated by the mic. And she, no joke, she said, I'm used to large things like this being in my face. And I just stared at her. And I mean, I'm all for a good Randy joke, but I couldn't come back to that one. Anyway, so.
No comment.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I'm not used to it.
That's what I was thinking. So let me start with this. Where did you grow up, Matt?
I grew up in Newton.
Okay. South or north? South or north?
That's always the question. I went to north, and I was the toughest kid at Newton North High School, for sure.
Is that, like, damning by faint praise? Or
I got my ass kicked a lot. I played a lot of sports with a lot of kids. My side of town, there weren't as many athletes, mm-hmm. but I played every sport, and then with the kid mushes from the lake, so I was a little bit of fish out of water. I had a foot in both doors.
Which one did John Krasinski go to? Is that yours or not yours?
I don't know.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
We'll have to look that up.
But it's always the first question, Newton North or Newton South, and Newton South is kind of...
And I'm sorry, you were which?
North.
North, okay, North. Yeah, John Krasinski went to Newton, let's see, he was born at St. Elizabeth Hospital in Brighton. He's Catholic, and I don't know where he went. He went to Brown. Smart guy. Anyway, he went to South, so you wouldn't have crossed paths with him.
Maybe, but hopefully, yeah.
He's a young guy. How old is he? 44, whatever. How did you get into building stuff? When did this passion start?
So I'd say from a young age, I always liked to build stuff. I was always tinkering around, taking stuff apart and putting mm-hmm. it back together, sometimes correctly, sometimes wrongly. My uncle was big into stuff, building, and he wasn't a builder or anything, but just a hobbyist builder. So I'd say he gave me my first lessons with that kind of stuff. I remember him, and he was just... very impatient. I remember him like sawing something with a cigarette in his mouth, just breathing kind of hard. Like, and then, Matthew, can you do this? Can you do that? And I was like, nervous. But I learned a little bit from him. And
so he was a carpenter.
He wasn't a carpenter. He was just
like to build stuff around that.
Just like to build stuff, okay. And just very talented guy in just building anything. So from there, I just had a little company. We'd build decks, mostly for friends and family. We do repairs, just whatever was around, and that was my business. Had a painting business, kind of sucked at it. We weren't big on prep, which is kind of important when you're doing old houses.
Yeah.
So I always loved building.
Mm-hmm. Did you have Lincoln Logs as a kid? Do you remember Lincoln Logs?
Oh, yeah.
I remember those are the greatest. If I had Lincoln Logs right here on this table here, I would play with them.
Yeah.
I mean, the way those things sort of clicked into place was just very satisfying.
That and Tinker Toys. I mean, being an old house developer, with Tinker Toys, they can get a little dicey compared to the Legos, which stick together. You just don't want to step on one in the middle of the night when your kids are left them all over the house.
That's right. The Tinker Toys were never perfect. I feel like sometimes you jammed one in there too hard, and then when it came time to pull it apart, you couldn't get it out. Yeah,
shoots across the room.
Exactly. Yeah. So Abrams Properties is your company. And by the way, it's abrams-properties.com. Give us a kind of idea of the scope. What types of things you build geographically, all that.
Yeah. We've done a lot of things over time. I mean, everything from we used to renovate mills for ourselves as developers. We did a lot of condo conversions. We did conversions of three-deckers in the South End for our own account. I mean, in Southie as well. I got out of the market when I thought it was too hot in around 2000. That was really a brilliant timing. But anyway, moved on to doing work for third-party homeowners about 3 years ago, which has been I was my own client for my whole life until 3 years ago.
You built your own home.
I did not. Yeah, I rehab my own home. Yes. Okay. A lot of our stuff is rehab. New construction would be a pleasure, but we've pigeonholed ourselves a lot into modernization, renovation, restoration of old houses, which has a whole different set of stuff that comes with it.
Probably harder, probably more challenging than building a house from scratch, right?
Way harder. You take down a wall and it's off by level by 4 inches at the top and one at the bottom. We just ran into that yesterday. Everything about it is harder. Making stuff match the old with the new, making it look right. I say it's a labor of love, and sometimes it is, and I'm happy with the end product. And a lot of our stuff is high-end, but this certainly new construction is a pleasure compared to what I do.
Mm. So your typical client is and geographically all around Boston area or
yeah we try to stick to Newton because I'm kind of famous there. No, I'm kind of been there for a while and it's a big market.
Newton North legend,
yes. Newton North legend in his own mind. Yes, absolutely. Mm. We do a lot in Newton, Brookline, Boston, and surrounding from that. Not much further than 10 miles outside of Boston. We're not going to go do something in Andover for you listeners out there.
And typical client is someone that comes to you with a house that they own and just want to totally renovate it or?
Yeah. Or partial renovate, which is another set of challenges. I mean, we've done houses in Newton. We're working around 100-year-old wallpaper, and we don't want to screw that up. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes the homeowner still lives in the house, which is another set of challenges. Yeah. It's better when they move out. Lost my train of thought there.
No, that's okay. So when someone comes to you, I'm wondering how often is their plan realistic in their head? Because I know people love their homes, right? But people also have big dreams about, I want this over here. Or I want a secret wall over here. Or I want a hot tub over here. And tell me about that process, because that must be interesting.
Yeah, that's a great question. So what we like to do is have the people develop their dream scope. Like, what's your dream? Then inside your dream, what are the most important things to you? And then we want to build to their budget. We don't want to create something that can't be built at your $1.8 million budget. We don't want to tell you, oh, it's $1.8 million and it comes in at $5 million. Because it happens. I mean, those numbers sound cuckoo, but it happens. So I like to think we're creative problem solvers. For instance, we took a home where an architect had designed a two-story addition that was like only like 1,000 square feet, and we priced it, and the price was cuckoo. They told us our price was crazy, and then they called me back 2 weeks later, well, we'd like you to reprice it. I'm like, why? If I was high before, I'm not going to be any lower now. But I came up with the idea, well, and to me it was obvious, they had a basement, it was 3,000 square feet with 10-foot ceilings. I'm like, wow, we can get your bar down there, we can get your pool table down there, we can get your sauna down there, we can get your movie theater down there. And they wanted a master suite. Well, they had a room right off their bedroom, a separate room that was sort of useless. Mm-hmm. And we just cut a hole in a wall that they probably didn't think they could cut a hole in that wall. And then they had a master suite. So they got about twice as much as they would have gotten building this by putting the stuff inside the envelope. And it was already a 10,000 square foot house instead of adding this.
They weren't even thinking of finishing the basement.
Didn't cross their mind. And it was like the first thing I saw. I'm like, so we see so much that I like to think we're very creative.
Yeah, basements are great and unique to this part of the country, I'm told. Like, or at least in some places of the country, they just don't have basements.
That's true. Yeah, other parts of the country, they just build slab on grade, but we have basements. Yeah, it's a massively underutilized part of the house. Same with the attics. And my clients, a lot of them are very wealthy, but everyone's got a budget. I don't care if you've got $100 million, $500 million, especially towards the end and those bills keep rolling in. Mm. Everybody's got a budget. So we like to try to meet expectations and meet that budget.
The last home that I owned with my wife at the time, we're not married anymore, it was our third home that we owned, and I finally got to build my dream basement. I mean, I didn't do it, of course. We hired somebody, but typical man cave. We had a bar down there. We had the speakers in the walls. We had leather couches, TVs, like more than one TV. Like I needed a TV by the bar so it could be like a real bar. And then we used to have these karaoke parties. So we built like this mini stage with with some stage lights. It was great. And it was like every morning I'd walk down, or every evening I'd go down there and see what the contractors had done. And a lot of times they didn't do anything for a couple of weeks. It happens. I understand.
Yes, it does.
But then when they started working, it was so cool. Have you built some, can you give us an example of something kind of elaborate and cool that you built that afterwards you were like, this is great, and the client was totally stoked?
Yeah. We've done a bunch of those. I would say the one that I just described, once we got going, there wasn't a piece of the house that we didn't touch. By the time we were done, they just kept rolling. Okay, we did 10 bathrooms over. We did the kitchen over. We added 3 decks. We added an outdoor kitchen area. It was during COVID. We added a patio. We added trees. I mean, literally, we did the gutters over. We did the roof. That one I'm incredibly proud of. There's a lot that we developed on our own, too, neighborhood.
Do those people invite you over for barbecues now?
You know what? I always want that to happen, and I think I'm going to be motorcycle riding with the dude or racing Porsches and stuff, and it doesn't happen. As much as I like them, and maybe they don't like me quite that much, but they're enough to give me a good recommendation.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Why do you like doing it?
Money. No, I'm just kidding. There's easier ways.
Well, you got to pay the bills.
You got to pay the bills. I think it goes back to being a kid. Like, I used to take like a bicycle that was a piece of junk Huffy to go see a girlfriend, and I'd modify it with some handlebars lying around another bike. And I was always into modifying stuff. Even boats that I'd buy, we'd always do something a little different to them. So I like starting with something and turning it into something better. And that's where the renovation, restoration, modernization comes in. And matching those pieces and being true to the house, not like creating an abortion, a mess, which you see a ton of them actually on the Newton South side. And I'm not just saying that because I went to North, but you see some serious odd construction.
Yeah.
So I do get a ton of satisfaction out of creating something far better and necessary for today's living, because people love the old homes. You're going to spend more oftentimes to keep that old stuff.
Right.
But to recreate it, you couldn't do it for what it would cost to restore it. Right. You could create a beautiful house by tearing this stuff down, but you couldn't have what these houses have, whatever soul they have, whatever little nicks they have on the doors, their imperfections. And people either love them or they don't. So I get a ton of satisfaction out of bringing all those elements together. I like working with the clients, most of them. And yeah, I do get a lot of satisfaction out of it.
There was a reality show that just had a short run, but it was called Catch a Contractor. And it was with comedian Adam Carolla, who has a background in carpentry. He really knows his carpentry. So the premise of the show was they would have people come to them whose contractor had screwed them, had either not finished the job or done a shoddy job and taken off with the money. And they would go in and set up a meeting, and then secretly they would show up, you know, and zing them. It was, you know, it was like To Catch a Predator, but, you know, shifty contractor, maybe probably not as bad as a predator, but still they bag these people, and then the client is there getting the ultimate sort of revenge and satisfaction. But it was amazing to me how, I don't know, maybe I'm naive. I think most people think you hire a professional, and they are just that. They're a professional. They might not do everything the way you want, but they have certain standards. There were things on the show where it's like they would build this like mini balcony that just to the naked eye, you could see this thing was going to fall down.
Oh, yeah.
So does that really go on?
Yes, it totally goes on. I'll tell you several things there. Yeah. Contractors get a bad reputation because there's a lot of bad eggs. I'll tell you one of the worst stories I heard. It's unconscionable. It was a friend. I wish he had hired me. I don't know why he didn't. Guy comes in, gives him a fat deposit, $70,000 for his kitchen, demos the kitchen, and then disappears for 6 months. Now I can figure the backstory. The guy didn't have enough money to finish another job.
Right.
So he got his deposit, went and finished that other job. The kitchen, no less. Not a half bath. So right, the guy's right, right. Living without a kitchen for 7 months.
I know, though. Yeah.
Stuff like that happens. Sometimes guys rip off deposits. My uncle was telling me about a guy in Florida. As my father would say, some people have more money than brains, but the family wasn't there. They were building a $17 million house, and the guy would send him YouTube videos of what he was doing and this and that. Well, it wasn't even the same house. So you have some crazy crap that goes on. And then our value proposition is, I'll tell people at times, I'm like,
Matt, I know you work with your hands, but you need to stop hitting the table.
Okay. I'm getting all worked up here.
Well, this is what you do. You work with tables and furniture, so of course you're going to want to hit them.
And I get fired up, and I don't like to see people get screwed. So getting back to that. And then our value proposition is, there's a guy with a pickup truck and a ladder on his truck who can do the same job, probably, hopefully, as well as we can. Mm-hmm. But we're going to pick up the phone. We're going to give you a report every week on what we've done, what we're going to do. We're going to return your call. Because how many times does someone not return your call? You're like, where are you? Where are you? Where are you? We'll at least pick it up and say, hey, look, we're not going to be there for 3 days, blah, blah, blah. And then back to your shoddy construction stories. Those are boundless. I mean, that balcony that fell is not...
not that unusual, really.
Maybe it's a little unusual, but you see a lot of cutting corners. And that's how maybe guys get the jobs. And I don't want those jobs, and I don't want to do that job. I mean, we'll fix what we screw up. We make mistakes all the time, but we'll fix it. And we want our clients to give us the opportunity to fix it. We'll fix it even if we lose on that a little bit.
Yeah. When I did my basement over the one I was describing before, one sort of little cool feature was I wanted a camera at the rear of the basement that could be pointed to this sort of little mini stage. And so I thought it would be cool for people to like see themselves as they're up on this goofy little thing.
That's kind of cool.
And so the AV guy that we hired installs the camera. I can see it there. It's like, this is great. And then, like, when the job's done, he goes, "Yeah, I couldn't coordinate that camera with the existing system." And I was like, "Okay." He just kind of stared at me. I had already paid him and everything.
Oh yeah, well, he didn't fix it.
No, he didn't. The camera just sat there.
Oh, so you had two systems?
Yeah. No, we just abandoned that. So that camera became just a prop, I guess. I should have insisted that he fix it, but he probably would have said, "Oh, I'll knock off $500 off the price," and that wouldn't have made me much more happy. So.
A lot of times there's a big song and dance around that stuff, and you got to come out in front of it and be honest with it. I mean, we've had a recent thing where someone nicked a window. Rather than put a Sharpie over it and try to hide it from the owner, we say, look, we're going to replace these windows that our guys messed up. So, that stuff happens all the time. I mean, the song and dance stories, I think those are commonplace, and as a homeowner, that would drive me nuts. Mm-hmm. And I get what you're saying. Where one of the things people don't realize about construction, especially when you're doing a smaller project or even a medium-sized home renovation, restoration, modernization. I should have an acronym for that. I'll work on that after. But is there's nothing linear about it, right? So if some walls are all messed up and you got to delay the frame, then the framing takes an extra 2 weeks. Well, guess what? Your plumber doesn't sit around for 2 weeks on his hands waiting to work on your job. He's got to go take another job for 5 days. So it's not sequential. You build a big apartment building, it's easier than doing these houses, and I've done both. When you're building a big apartment building, you frame it. When it's half framed, all the subs come in who do the mechanical stuff right behind them, and it's a big enough job. They keep going sequentially, and boom, 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 boom. It's like an erector set. I mean, it's far more formulaic than what we do. What we do is kind of fungible the whole way through.
What kind of trends are you seeing in home building and renovations these days? Are there, like, I'm thinking, for example, you probably don't do pools, or do you do pools?
I could figure out a pool.
We put in a pool at one point in the home we owned, and I don't regret that we did it, but after having done the whole thing, I can see why some people are like, it's not worth having a pool in New England.
They look cool as hell. I mean, I would use a pool. I'm a big aqua water person, but, you know, also being a real estate developer, and I think that's where my experience comes in well. I know where people should put the money and where they shouldn't. If you have unlimited budget, put it whatever. Put your plunge pool in. Put your this, put your that. all right, I know what's accretive to creating value to your home. And as maybe you know, and a lot of people know, a lot of times we buy stuff as developers, we take out the pool because people don't want them.
Yeah.
It's almost like they're not looking at the house being like, wow, I'm not going to buy this. I wish there was a pool there. Mm-hmm. It's more like if there wasn't a pool, they might think, oh, that'd be a good place for a pool someday. But you're asking about trends. Yep. I see a lot of people, a big trend is hiring Abrams Properties to do your work, or at least we're hoping.
It's abrams-properties.com, by the way.
Yes, thank you for that plug. We had to pay a lot for the dash to make it more complicated, but yeah, there's a lot of outdoor space that people are adding. That was a COVID trend, and I think that continues. I think you're going to see more people doing renovations to their house because so many people locked in at 3%. They're not going to move to a new house at 7%. But if they can borrow on a home equity line at 7 to do the basement over, when you average those rates together, it's not all that bad. Now maybe you're at 4.2, but now you've just added value to your house. I don't think we're going to see those interest rates for maybe ever again. Mm-hmm. And so with those people staying put, at some point they're going to renovate. Another thing I'm seeing is people who are buying new houses, because they are still buying new houses, and a lot of the high-end clients, it really doesn't matter, but even the medium-end clients is – they aren't renovating as much. So they'll live with kind of that tired kitchen and stuff, and they'll live with it for maybe a good long time. So I think might be a while before some of those younger folks, maybe buying their first or second house, start to do their renovations. The trends that I'm seeing, everyone's curious about more and more about the smart house thing. And solar, they're not so right there yet. They're starting to make, from what I understand, so that the different mediums can communicate with one another, whether you're on Alexa or Google thing or whatever, that they can all start to talk. And I think that's going to start to make a difference. The solar.
I have in my apartment, I have some smart things. Well, first of all, in my apartment, it's a touch screen just to get into my unit, and you punch in a code.
Is it called Butterfly?
I don't know.
Because we repped a couple of those. Maybe. They're really cool, actually. Yeah. They make a lot of sense.
And it is useful because there's an app that you have on your phone. And then, so I'll pull into my complex, and before I get out of the car, I'll take up the phone and unlock my door, right? So that's kind of cool. It's a little bit of a, then sometimes it just doesn't work. So it's like,
I mean, we put Nest in for a lot of people, and people are.
Oh, that's similar, yeah.
But sometimes the things drive me crazy. I can't figure out how to get one going with the other one. I mean, the client a lot of times is more technologically savvy with operating the stuff. I know how to put it in. No problem. We'll get it in. We'll get it working. My guys will get it working. Operating it thereafter, you're either that kind of person or you're not.
Yeah, it's one of these things that's kind of nice, but after a time you realize you don't really need it. I took, the first time I got an Alexa, I took like a whole day teaching it to turn on my TV and be able to change the channel.
Right.
But even then, it didn't always work. And so it's like, Alexa channel 5, and then it'll be like, I'm sorry, I don't know what you mean, or something like that. I'm like, we just did this yesterday, Alexa, you idiot. Anyway.
Or like controlling this light bulb in this room compared to that other room and having it come on when this time. And I mean, yes, you can probably go berserk. I think it's got a ways to go. And like you said, some of it's useful and some of it's just your technophile and hey, why not?
Right, exactly. So with the outdoor space, I take it, what do you tend to recommend? Because some people have, I know that the outdoor cooking space, that's really popular. Patio furniture. I just feel like I have a buddy who I house sat for him for a while, and he had the outdoor furniture, and it just seemed like the outdoor furniture was so hard to keep it clean in New England. There's always leaves and stuff in
slippery.
It
slippery.
Yeah, and he didn't have like a, what do you call it, a pergola, is that the word?
Yeah.
Or even, I don't know what you call that, like a covering almost like
it's a pergola. They have like electric canopies that come off of houses, like electric cover, let's call it.
So you can sit out there if it's a rainy day, you can still sit out there. Do you recommend those or?
Yeah, they're really expensive. I priced them for people, even some fairly fluent people, that it shouldn't have been a factor of cost potentially wasn't. And they opted against it because they were like, this is not worth the money. I'd rather not sit out in the rain and be protected.
Right.
I don't see a ton of those. I think you're better off hiring someone to pressure wash the furniture and get that moss and crap off it.
right. Tell me what some misconceptions are about what you do or people that come in with a certain idea and you have to kind of set them straight.
Yeah, I think the misconception is that it's easy. Mm. Everybody watches a show now and thinks yeah. it's easy. And I want to do a spoof on those shows, like, because what they don't show you is I want to do this old house, the real story.
Yeah.
Because the real story is ugly and you don't need to see it. That's my job to deal with it.
Mm.
But there's a cost and there's a time to that and there's a inefficiency to it. I'm not saying we overcome those hurdles and we get your jobs done on time and on budget, but there are just surprises galore. Mm. That's one misconception. The misconception also is maybe unrealistic pricing expectations. I'd say that's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
I've been fortunate enough through the design build method that we use and a lot of guys use to meet those expectations. But if they're just way off, I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm not the guy for you. And maybe they can find someone to do it. I'd love to see what the product looks like after, because mm-hmm. they might be falling through the floor or something.
Right.
Yeah, I just think, and then there's just, I think the delays that naturally happen, like, we want to be out of your home as much as you want us out of your home.
Right.
Our interests are aligned with getting the job done.
Right.
And that can be a little bit hard to manage. And then I think the biggest thing is, and it's not even a misconception, it's just reality. Towards the end of jobs, I mean, that's when, it's not that changes are rolling in, but all the things that you modified and we told you it was going to cost, it's just you got to keep opening your checkbook.
Right.
And it's no fault of our own, but you're lying at night with your significant other or whatever, and you're like, we spent what?
Yeah.
And how much did you spend on custom furniture? That's the part I don't see. They might have spent $500,000 on custom furniture, and they can't start ripping out tiles. They can't start ripping out plumbing fixtures, and everyone's all excited at the beginning. And that's where things can get a little tenuous, but we always work it out.
Right. It's Matt Abrams, the founder of Abrams Properties. Again, it's abrams-properties.com. Anything else our listeners should know about how they get in touch with you? Or
no, that's the best way. They can go to our website. We've got a lot of great pictures. Text me. I always pick up the phone. Always text back.
Good. Go ahead. Give out your number if you want to.
Sure. My number is 617-821-4005. And yeah, we run out and look at projects right away. I mean, we're not, hey, we'll get to you when we get to you. No, not our style. We like new business and we chase it and pursue it aggressively. And we're ready to do your job.
Excellent. Well, the next time I buy a home, I'm in. It might be a little while, though. I'm kind of renting for the moment, but hell yeah. I mean, I'm interested in what you do just because it's exciting. I remember how exciting it was to redo part of your home, and you must just make a lot of people happy. Is that moment nice? What, tell me about that moment when you're done and the person's like, wow.
We make people happy. Some customers are, you just can't please them. You just do everything they want you to do and you do it well. And I know they're happy with the product in the end, but they just have to not be happy. And that's just a personality type. But when things go well, which more often than not they do, when that person is excited and they move in and they love the house and they've digested that, here we are, we've spent this, we've spent that, and that's a great feeling. Ending on a good note with the client where we walk away friends, or they call me again, or they want us to warranty some work that's well past warranty, but we're happy to do it. That's a good feeling.
Mm.
Client selection is really important. It's just as important as them picking me. It has to. We're married for a year.
So
literally,
have you fired people or walked away?
Yeah, it's a great feeling firing someone. To be honest with you. I love it. I don't do it unless I really, really have to. But yeah,
or we all do it, and it's. I mean, I think you're like me. You like people. You like working with people. I've of course I produce podcasts for a living. I build podcasts, which is a lot easier than building homes, but. I've had ones where you wake up one day, you realize you're spending more time and mental anguish on like this one person trying to satisfy everything that they want. And then you say to yourself, is it me? Am I screwing this up? But then you got like two dozen other clients who do nothing but sing your praises. And
right.
you realize, wait a minute, why don't I just get rid of this person? And inevitably, the few times it's happened to me when I've said, I just don't think we can work together anymore, you feel great the next day. You're like, why didn't I do this?
Oh, yeah. Right? It's like one bad apple in the bullpen. Yeah, when I know the feeling. You get that text, and invariably the text is like, they think I can talk to you at 10:30 at night, which I'd look at, and it's like, it's about a thermostat wire hanging under the wall. Hey, we got a crack here. And that person is just all over you. And that's inefficient to getting the job done. One other thing I'd say, I'd caution homeowners against is let us do our job And I say that because there is so much information out there on YouTube, this, that, the other thing. Hey, why don't you do this way? No, we know how to do it. We've been doing it for 30 years. So a client can encumber the process if they don't just let you do your job. And that's the same in every business. For sure. A home is about as emotional as it gets, right? I mean, it's your baby. We all love our house. So, but it is a great feeling when we create a great product and it just looks amazing and the client's happy. And that is a good feeling.
Matt is going to stick around to do a round of good stuff where Matt and I will discuss something good that we need to tell you about. And spoiler alert, it's a TV show and it's a really good one. Before we do that, let me take 1 minute to remind you what we do here at the Boston Podcast Network. It's pod617.com is where you go if you want your own show. Would you like to be the next big podcast star? Would you just like to use your podcast as a vehicle to enhance and market your product, your services, your company? It's a great way to reach out to your network. Your guests will be amazed when they're invited to the show, and we produce the quality product that we do. Go to pod617.com to get started. It's the Boston Podcast Network. In pod, we trust. All right, let's do a round of good stuff.
Oh, that's the good stuff.
Well, before we started recording, Matt and I discovered we both have a love for the same TV program, and you've probably heard of this, but it just announced its final, it just launched final season of the series. Right. Anyway, I'm going to play the trailer because it speaks for itself, and then Matt and I will tell you about it.
Have you noticed that when you take a picture, you don't look nearly as good as you do when you look in the mirror?
Because the mirror is how you see yourself, and the photo is how you're seen.
Fuck, that's deep.
Whether I'm right.
I love Leon.
I love Leon. Antibiotics.
Antibiotics. And that gives men breasts. She's great.
Larry could grow breasts.
I thought of Larry with breasts.
Larry's the kid.
It's not good for you.
Pretty cute.
I gotta be me.
That's what happens when people have sex. They say, I love you. You're very special.
People talk like that?
Yeah.
Men do that?
You're small, you're petty, you're jealous. You're a walking fucking virus, Larry.
I gotta be free.
Great compliment.
Very sorry to hear about your father.
Father-in-law, thank you.
Well, that's a little better.
Your dad's still alive?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go.
Oh, God. All right. So this is, of course, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David's peek into his life. Some say it's really close to the real Larry David. We don't know that, of course. And it's season 12, and I just saw episode 1. We won't talk so much about episode 1 because I know you haven't seen it yet, Matt. But exciting for Larry to be back in our lives and his cast of characters. I love Jeff Garland. I think he's great. Susie Essman is unbelievable as the foul-talking wife to Jeff.
Bitchy Jewish woman. I'm Jewish. I can say that. I know a lot of hers.
Me as well. So, yeah, tell me why you love the show.
I'll tell you, before that, one super quick story, if Larry's really like that. So when I was married, we were at Clink over in
Liberty Hotel.
Liberty Hotel. And Larry was walking by because he's good friends with whatever, one of the developer of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. And my wife at the time, Rebecca, we walked by, and I never say hi to celebrities, and she said to him, she goes, hi, we're such a fan. And a lot of people say my husband and I are he's kind of like you, and I'm kind of like Cheryl. Mm. And she was like Cheryl, and Larry looked over, he goes, yeah, I could see that.
Hey, that's good. You got that out.
Yeah, I don't know if it's much of a compliment for me, but I kind of get what Larry's going on most of this stuff. I think most people agree with Larry. They just don't have the gall to do the stuff he does.
Yeah, and that's just it. And that's just, you watch the show sometimes cringing because you can feel the moment coming where he's just going to be more honest than he probably should be, but. I think you're right. I think we have a lot of those urges. I have a son. My son Adrian has autism, and so
mine too.
Is that right?
Yeah. My oldest son Zachary.
Oh, how old is Zachary?
Zachary's 23.
Yeah, Adrian's 25.
Oh, maybe getting together.
But
them on air.
So Adrian would last about 3 minutes.
And Zachary too. There would be not much communication.
Right. He'd go all done, but. One thing that it's like a Curb Your Enthusiasm kind of thing, because if ever I'm with Adrian and we're at a party, a get together, a dinner, something, and he will get impatient. He can hang for a while, but eventually he'll say, time to go.
Oh, yeah.
Time to go. And so once he wants to leave, if it all works out, I'm kind of happy to leave as well. and so no one's going to question. It's like, oh, well, Adrian, he has certain
I got to start to use that tool. Yeah. That's brilliant because Zach is immediately like, Dad, when are we going? And I'm like, Dad, well, we got to stick around longer. I should be like, take him up to the guy that I don't like, just like Larry does, and be like, hey, this is my son, Zach. Hey, Dad, we got to go. Ay, man, I can't talk. I got to go.
Yeah. Yeah, well, my son has autism, and sometimes he's just patient.
Brutally honest.
Yeah.
Brutally honest.
Right. I mean, it hit me when I think I heard an interview with Larry David, and he said, one of my favorite things to do is leave. I love to leave places.
I watched
Leaving
that.
Is great. Right?
I watched that one, I think, last night. Yeah.
Yeah.
The big goodbye.
Yeah. And so he has that in common with my son. But so it's one thing I realized about the show is they have a rule that there's no learning and no hugging, which is the same two rules he applied when he was doing Seinfeld.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, it's just no hugging, no, because
he's worried about germs, isn't he?
No, well, yeah,
like Howard.
No, it's that, but he just never wanted to stray from the core mission of this comedy show, which is to bring out the humor in life's little moments and not much else. I think he would say that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're most comedies, eventually they'll have like a heartwarming moment or
yes,
something
right.
like, well, and there, and there will never be one in this show.
The heartwarming moment is him losing at the end time and again, screwing himself.
Right. You never get that moment at the end. Well, and at the end, everything worked out okay. No, usually it doesn't. He doesn't always lose. Sometimes he wins, but someone goes away unhappy.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah. Yes.
Do you have a favorite episode?
I have some,
or favorite character?
Leon, I think, is my favorite character.
Oh, man. Leon.
I love when, at the end, when the blacks were leaving his house, which was just brilliant in and of itself, that they're at his house. He's a rich guy. I love Larry. He's bored. He doesn't have enough to do, whatever. Katrina family lives at his house.
Right.
And Larry's doing everything to be nice to these people, this, that, the other thing. And they're leaving, and they're like, fuck you, Larry David. And Leon walks by eating Chinese food out of a bowl or something. Right. And Larry's like, so I guess you're gonna... He goes, I'm gonna go upstairs and eat my motherfucking Chinese food. And he's been on the show ever since. I love that.
Yeah. Well, when they showed up, he goes, your name's Black. Oh, well, and you're Black. That would be like if my name was Larry Jew. And they did not find that funny at all. But one of the themes of the show, which is actually, in my opinion, kind of endearing, is that Larry can make friends. Larry will make, he doesn't like to have a lot of friends, but when he makes friends.
They love him.
Yeah, and it can be people that you wouldn't think he would be friends with.
The guy right? in prison. The guy who's a, yeah.
Yeah, the gangster rapper.
Yes. I love that about Larry.
And Leon, who is the complete polar opposite of Larry, it's actually a pretty cool representation of an unlikely friendship, and they teach each other. And it's not about anything terribly important, but Larry would tell Leon about some confrontation he's had, and Leon's like, did you get all up in his business? Did you get all up in his face? And Larry's going, I got up in his face. And
Larry's not afraid to have these offbeat characters. He brings Leon into meetings with the most famous people in the world. And Leon's like right there eating his fucking goo or whatever he's drinking. And
right.
No, but I think that's, if I could say real quick.
Sure.
One of the biggest I love comedy, is one of the biggest misconceptions in the world of people who kind of don't get stuff or do get stuff is that they're making fun of everyone.
Yeah.
The blacks. He's making fun of himself. I mean, I'm watching episode 11. He's making fun of Jews nonstop. I mean, just makes fun of himself. Like you said, he can make these unlikely friends. Yeah. He's not judging. As judgy as he is, he's not judging in certain moments.
He might be judgmental, but he's not prejudiced, right?
Yes.
That's just
better way to put it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He will.
Not saying he's judgmental was stupid.
Well, you know
me.
What? I guess he's not. He's not necessarily judgmental. Like I feel like you can insult him to his face, and he'd still, he wouldn't be let like. I hate that fucking guy.
Or he might be like, you're right. I am a loser. Yes. I hate myself. He says that all the time.
Yes, I'm obnoxious. Of course, I'm terrible at parties. Yes. it's on Max, of course. I'm still not used to saying Max. They really bring back the HBO. That's what we love. HBO. Yes, exactly. Season 12. And also, I should recommend there's a podcast that just launched. It's the History of Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's with Jeff Garlin and Susie Essman, who, of course, play Jeff and Susie on the show. And they're going through the entire season. So it just started recently. They're up to episode 3.
So they
break down.
I'd listen to that.
Right. They break down and you hear all kind of little things about things that happen behind the scenes and what Larry's really like. And
is it true they ad-libbed the show, or is it a loose script, or is it?
Right. They said that they've never had a script. They've always just had outlines. The outlines apparently have evolved over time, and now they're a little bit more elaborate than they used to be. But yeah, it can't be the only show that's ever done this, but it's very rare. Even shows like The Office, which kind of seems improv'd, isn't really. It really is all scripted. This show is not scripted, and so it goes to and that's why he hired. Mostly, with the exception of Cheryl Hines, I think the rest of the cast were all comedians or improv players. Susie and Jeff and JB Smoove, he was a comedian. And so they have these comedy chops,
right?
Which is cool.
Do I have time to ask you a quick question?
Sure, go ahead.
Or is that not allowed on the show?
No, go ahead.
Okay. I've had many Larry David moments myself. I mean, maybe too many. Have you had a Larry David moment, and do you remember one of them?
I have, and this isn't a perfect example, but but I definitely felt like I could have been in a Curb episode. So I was asked by my uncle to I got to back up a minute. My uncle is kind of a cool ringleader in our family. He's always inviting people over, and he invited everybody over to watch the Patriots. This is probably 10, 15 years ago. And as it happened, the Patriots lost that day. And I wanted to do something to thank him, though, because he threw this huge party. I printed out I had a brand new printer, and I printed out a photo, like 8x10, of Tom Brady. And I signed it. I said, "Hey, John, I'm sorry we sucked. I heard your party was great. Love, Tom Brady." And I gave it to him. I framed it, and I gave it to him. He got a big kick out of it. So flash forward a little while, and he calls me, and he says, "Hey, Dave, my father-in-law, Mr. Sullivan, he's not doing so well, and we don't think he's going to last too much longer." And he says, "So, you know how you printed out that photo of Brady and signed it? Could you do that for Mr. Sullivan?" And I said, "Oh, you mean like as a joke?" Like, he goes, "Well, the joke will be between you and me." So he's telling me, like,
fool the guy.
Right, fool the guy.
Which he's dying, so why not?
The guy's dying, so what am I going to do? So I...
Fool me when I'm dying. I'll
so
be happy.
I did it. And I gave it to him, and John said, "Yeah, Dave, thanks. That was really great. It really gave Mr. Sullivan a smile." And I'm like, oh, God. I feel good, but also kind of guilty. And then...
Is he dead?
Yeah. Oh,
you shouldn't feel too guilty.
He died shortly after that, and I went to the wake... And this didn't happen.
The picture was there?
This didn't right. Imagine if it was, though.
In the coffin, like the putter and
that
curb.
Would have been like I walked by the coffin and it's like.
Put the picture up.
Right. So that was the moment I felt like I was in a Curb episode. Have you had one?
I knew the question was coming back at me. I mean, I probably had 5 this morning. No. I have too many that I can't even remember a specific one.
And is it like...
And I'm not so proud of that, believe me.
And is it like run-ins with like... It's usually run-in with like the barista at the coffee shop.
Yeah, or like, the pharmacist where you're trying to get a prescription refilled and maybe it's something you really need.
Yeah.
And you want to say to the person, "Look, do you know what the prescription is for? You know what it is. And if you knew what it is, you'd get it from me now."
Yeah.
So some of those kind of moments.
But all right. We'll have to have you back. We'll do a whole episode of Curb.
I would love to.
Curb moments. All right. I hope you had fun.
I really did.
Matt,
I love it.
Fantastic, fantastic guest. And we'll tell people one more time. It's Abrams Properties. That's abrams-properties.com. Did I get that right?
You got it.
Okay.
Dash, not underscore, and properties isn't plural because that doesn't exist on the internet.
What do you mean it's not plural?
I mean it's not possessive. Right. It doesn't have an apostrophe.
No apostrophes.
Yes, it is plural.
Nothing like
sorry.
That. Just property. That's okay. That's okay. Abrams-properties-. Hyphen? No, dash.
Hyphen. They're synonymous.
They are the same thing.
Not underscore.
Not underscore, right. Thanks so much for being a guest on the Boss Podcast.
Thank you.
And to all you out there, we thank you for listening. Subscribe to us. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your pods. And go to pod617.com if you want your own show. On behalf of Matt Abrams, my name is Dave. I'm just a guy from Boston. But if you're not from Boston, you must be the other guy. Have a great day, everybody.
Thanks, Dave.
You're north.
Tigers.
Go north. See ya.